baby denied its bottle. "More than 1,000 slaves bound for El, confound it! And we're stuck in this beastly hole. Of all the luck! We'll never be fit in time."
"Oh, I don't know," says our informant, another sprightly juvenile, modishly clad in jellaba, brass-button jacket and pirate headscarf. "Slavers meant show for a week yet, and confounded ain't far across from Zula. Tell your engineer you'll stop his grog if he don't get a move on, why don't you?" A damn silly question, since the surest way to make a British workman take his time is to threaten him, especially if you call him a Port Mahon baboon into the bargain. And it was all of another 10 days, a week later than Speed had reckoned, before we were steaming down Annesley Bay, the gulf on which Zula lies. And you know, only now, with my first glimpse of the Abyssinian shore, did it come home to me that apart from the sketch I'd been given by Speed and a few scraps I'd picked up from Ballantyne and the boys at Jeddah, I knew nothing about the country or people, or why we were going to war with them. Really. I'd left Trieste in the deuce of a hurry, quite elated at escaping the consequences of my evil conduct and the novelty of the commission I'd been given, and here I was, with the job almost done, and wondering for the first time what the dickens it was all about. And since you, honest reader, know no more than I did myself as we threaded our way through the vast fleet assembled in Annesley Bay and were engulfed in Zula's two most charming attractions, borne by the land breeze, a fine powdery dust that hung over us in a cloud, and the most appalling stench, it seems a proper time to tell you of things which I had yet to learn, about Abyssinia and the casus belli that had brought Napier and his army all the way from India to this mysterious coast. To begin with, you must understand that the Abyssinians are like no other Africans, being some kind of Semitic folk who came from Arabia in the far-off time. Handsome, cruel and bloodthirsty, but civilized beyond any in the continent bar the Egyptians, with whom they shared a fierce mutual hatred, partly because the Gypos were forever carrying off their beautiful women and boys as slaves, partly because the Abs, as I call them for convenience, are devout and violently militant Christians who can't abide Muslims or Roman Catholics. Very orthodox they are, having been Christian long before we were, and of fairly primitive doctrine. I've seen church paintings, admission $1, of a Byzantine-ish-looking St. George slaying the dragon, while Pharaoh's daughter and her handmaidens look on in admiration, and a depiction of the Last Supper with places laid for 14. And their Christianity don't run to morality, not far at least. They lie and deceive with a will, drink to excess, slaughter each other for amusement, and the women couple like stoats. The corollary to their adage that a virtuous woman is a crown to her husband is that there are damn few crowned heads in Abyssinia, and hear, hear, say I, for 'twould be a cruel shame to have all that splendid married pulchritude going to waste. They don't look at all negroid. Indeed, the Ab females fit my notion of Cleopatra, with their straight noses, chiselled lips, almond eyes, saucy shapes, and, in many cases, skins no darker than an Italian's. They know how to preen, too. The Shoho women of the north in shell-embroidered black cloaks over tight leather tunics from bosom to thigh. Jolly fetching. And the Gala girls of the south, reckoned the handsomest of all, their perfect faces framed by elaborate oiled braids, plaited from crown to shoulder. Some go naked to the waist, with little aprons made of thongs, and by gad they can stand the exposure. But if they're fair, they're fierce. One I knew was such a peach that the slavers who'd taken her expected a record price, but were disappointed when she discouraged the buyers by juggling a throwing knife during the bidding, and they had to give her away. In the men, the Egyptian look is enhanced by their white cotton robes and their laziness, for they're the idlest folk alive, except when fighting, which they are much of the time, for everyone's a warrior and goes armed. They don't seem to know what fear is. The younger nobles have a curious custom of waiting at river fords to challenge travellers to single combat, and how they came by that Arthurian custom must be an interesting story. Their houses aren't much better than large huts, thatched and simply furnished, although they have occasional castle-like buildings on hilltops. Their towns are large walled villages with what seem to be permanent fences.